I'll be hosting this conversation, but really this is a conversation for all of us to have together. A couple of things before we start. I do want to let you know that this session is being taped. And sometimes that might change the kinds of things you might want to say. But we do find that it's helpful, though, to have these tapes in our tape library so that other people who want to listen in on our conversation have that opportunity. The format of our session will be mostly just kind of sparking conversation. You're welcome to ask me any question you'd like, and I will do my best to try to answer that. But I also ask you to help each other out with questions and answers as well. This really is our conversation. Tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Julie Bolin, and I am the computer support person here. I've been here about a year now, and I'll leave in a little less than 2 weeks. So, a big transition point in my life. I am a lesbian. I came out about 2 years ago, and really experienced that as an experience of new life. And I mean that in the most biblical sense that I can. Suddenly, I felt as if a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders in accepting who I am as a lesbian, and not trying to hide that and not trying to be other than who God created me to be. And in that experience, I also found that the Bible started to make a lot more sense. It became my feeling that the Bible is written towards marginalized people. People who are on the outside, who we would tend to choose to draw a circle around and say they aren't really Christians, or they aren't really a part of us. For example, the story of Lazarus, I suddenly had a new sense of what it meant for Lazarus to be called forth from the tomb and to be called to live a new life. And what it meant at the end of that Lazarus story, Jesus calls upon the crowd to unbind Lazarus. And I also then became aware of what Jesus really meant by that. In that, as a community, I feel we are called to unbind the wounds and the closets of this world, be they the closets that people know being gay or homosexual, or closets people know from being divorced, or other sorts of categories we might choose to put somebody into. About a year after I came out to Holden, and have been able to continue that experience of new understanding. And so for me, being a lesbian is very closely tied to being Christian. I get strength for being who I am by pulling from the Bible and from my Christian roots and my Christian community. And I've definitely found that to be true at Holden as well. That's kind of where I'm at. And again, I'm willing to answer or try to answer any questions you might have. So let's go ahead and go around the room. Where you're from?
Okay. You want to share with me?
Sure.
All right. I'm Barb, and I'm from Minnesota. And I'm just here out of curiosity. When we saw the talk on the board, my daughter said, "Oh, look, this looks good." She isn't here, however. Anyway, not because we're lesbian, but just because we're interested. So, just out of curiosity.
I'm Bruce. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, and likewise, just curious.
Marty, I'm here to learn and understand. I'm from California, and just to understand both sides of the question.
Hi, Mrs. Chan. I'm from Redding, California, and I'm the grandmother of a lesbian.
Russell, we're taking to North Dakota with the group from Nick.
I'm one from Dickinson, also one of the group that came out here, just to see what's correct, and have some answers from some of the verses in the Bible that I would like to get answers from in this meeting.
First, also from the group from Dickinson.
My name is Martha. I've been here for about 2.5 weeks. Originally from Montoursville, Pennsylvania, but I've been in Atlanta, Georgia for the last 4 years. I'm here on staff as the part-time backup nurse and part-time in media ministries. And I am a gay man. And the only reason that I say that is because it does, it has in part defined me, not that being gay makes me different, essentially from other people, but the experience of growing up gay in a culture that doesn't value you does have a tremendous effect on you. And then there are some things that are essentially unique, that I find essentially unique about being gay that I consider to be wonderful gifts from God. And I wish to celebrate that. And because people typically assume that you are heterosexual unless stated otherwise, that's why I choose to let people know that I am gay. And then people can engage in conversation about that, because one of the most painful things about growing up gay and being gay is the invisibility associated with it. You grow up with no role models because people don't, people fear having that be out in the open. They fear that their children will become gay if that's out in the open, which there's absolutely nothing to support that, but the fear of that does a lot of harm to people who are in great need of some support and some role models while they're growing up. And it continues to affect who I am on a daily basis, because I continue to live inside a culture that that is very judgmental in many ways, not just about homosexuality, but that is the main way that it affects me. And my coming out experience is pretty interesting, because I did it in a rather dramatic way, because I did it while I was in the Marine Corps. And I kind of had to be faced with the exact opposite of who I was as a person before I was really ready and willing to deal with it. It was a catalyst for me. And it's that's been about 10 years ago, and it's an ever-unfolding journey for me, really. And the only other comment I want to make about it right now is the fact that, you know, some of you may know people who believe that being gay or being homosexual or queer or transgendered or any of those gender variant associations that people might come up with is somehow counter to being close with God or counter to your spirituality. And the thing that I found in not just in coming out, but coming out into being a spiritual person, is that many gay and lesbian, transgender, bisexual people across, at least across our country and perhaps across the world at this particular point in time, are coming back into places of spirituality through their sexual orientation, through, if you will, their wounds, which is how many of us actually come to our spirituality, is through your deepest hurts and your deepest wounds. And this is how many people in the gay community now are healing. So as Julie said, I find the issue of sexual orientation, for me, very closely linked to spirituality. I can't separate the two in my mind, because that period of self-questioning about that sprung from my sexual orientation is what brought me to questioning my beliefs in God, and it's brought me into this wonderful place where I'm closer than I've ever been before to feeling like a whole human being, and I think that's a beautiful, wonderful thing. So I can praise God for having giving me my wound as a gift.
I'm Craig, and I'm from Olala, Washington.
Kathleen from Muckleton, Washington.
I'm Seth from Vancouver, BC.
I'm Hans from Decorah, Iowa.
I'm Connie from Decorah.
Let's go ahead and
Marilyn from Davis, California.
I'm Kathy from El Nacero, California. And I come too with, some need to help a friend here in the chamber the son of one of my co-workers at the University of California in Davis, a young man who reached out to me when I came into a unit just to add my expertise for a short period of time. I was struck by his kindness and his genuine love of, you know, people around him, that sense that he was, you know, having his own personal demons that he was dealing with at the time. And he chose me to tell the time that he was, quote unquote, coming out of the closet. And I think I was honored that he trusted me enough to share his pain because of a deep rejection by his father.
Hi, I'm David, and I live here at Holden Village as media ministry head. Plus, I'm a concert violinist who has traveled all over the world concertizing. And I came out at Holden in 1993 to an overwhelming support of community here, being raised as a Lutheran. Five generations, I am in awe of what has come through me to be here. I'm overjoyed to be able to share my talents and my openness of life in this valley, and to all who may want to partake in the bread and blood of Christ.
I'm Mike. I'm from Burnsville, Minnesota. And I've come here to learn, obviously to learn, to be able to express myself better in the way I feel about the gay and lesbian person, and I hope I come away with some knowledge in that regard.
I'm Jennifer Ann. I'm from Burnsville, Minnesota also. And a lot of my close friends are lesbian or gay, and so I'm just kind of interested in seeing some other people share the same thing and get views on other people of what they think. Because I know it's not easy for them.
Bob from Decorah, Iowa. Just had a lot of interaction with people from all of them. Variety of cultures, including gay and lesbian structure, and they're always teaching me some new things, so I'm just here to continue that learning process.
I'm Meryl from Decorah, Iowa. I guess I've been struck by, I get very emotional when I talk about the inability of our church to discuss the topic. And we've covered AIDS and so many other things, but we seem to have this blockade.
I'm Joseph Dickinson. I'm from Florida, and I came to learn, to understand.
I remember when I was afraid of Washington, I think I came as a sponge, just listening. It's a topic. It's, you know, it's truly interesting. I've struggled with this mentally and thought about, you know, our nation, and, you know, and I have, you know, preformed, you know, coming from the old Native background and all that, you know, if you're in military, you're brainwashed into a pattern of thought, building a manner of speaking, you know, and that sticks with you, things learn. You know, it takes a while to unlearn that type.
Just going around the room, introducing ourselves.
Who am I? My name is Jill from the Portland, Oregon area, and why we're here. I'm just always curious, interested in the issue. It always seems so ironic or something that the general mainline and real conservative Christian attitude towards homosexuality is so contrary to what I think the message of Christianity is. And I don't know, that always fascinates me, so come to hear about. So are there any questions that are out there you'd like to ask?
Are there scriptural commentary on homosexuality? Is it an issue of understanding or translation or meaning? Where?
Yes.
What is that?
There are, and there are probably other people who have information on this too. I'm not asked to talk about this, but there are about 7 different passages in the Bible that refer in some way or another to sexuality issues. And some people would say that there are far less than that. There's a book that I would highly recommend to anybody who's real interested in this topic called Is the Homosexual My Neighbor? And this goes specifically through each of those 7 passages and looks at it in what I consider a very helpful way. It looks at what the message of this passage is, what the historical sort of viewpoint on that passage has been, and perhaps some different ways to look at it. You had brought up that there were a couple of passages that you were interested in.
Do you want me to go into that?
Sure.
I found a Bible next door here. It's one I didn't print myself. In Romans, 1 Romans 24, therefore God gave them up in the lusts of their heart for impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. Their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in their own persons the due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a base mind and to improper conduct. They were filled with a manner of wickedness, evil, covetousness, malice, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. though they know God's decree that those who do such things, though they know God's decree that those who do such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but approve those who practice them.
Mm-hmm. Are there any theologians or pastors? Okay. Are you? Well, you can help me out here in some regard.
I don't know.
My understanding of that passage, that passage is often considered the one that's most blatantly against homosexual people. My understanding of that passage is that it is written towards a very specific community that is doing some very, that Paul believes is doing some very unhelpful things, especially given that long list of nasty things. There are those who would say that it would be unnatural for me as a lesbian to be involved in a relationship with a man. That is not the natural way that God created me to be. And so therefore, this passage would then call me to be honest and true to who I am as a lesbian and not do what would be unnatural. There are many other arguments that go around that particular passage. One of the things that I keep coming back to, though, in looking at particular passages in the Bible, any particular passage, you can find things that
support slavery. You can find things that support all sorts of nasty things that we as a society have accepted as not okay. You can, it's fairly easy to do that. But what I would suggest doing is taking a step back and looking at the whole of the message. What is the Bible really calling us to be about? And one of those things that I see the Bible is calling us to be about is welcoming the stranger, as shown in the Good Samaritan story. The Samaritan, who actually is the one who helps the man who was hurt, is as outside as you can possibly get. And God calls us to be like that outsider, to help our neighbor.
Julie, before you would even do that, because I agree with you, it seems like it's all based on negativity when we start picking those passages out. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be anyone left in the church if that's what we did. The people that are committing adultery, the people that are stealing, the people that are lying, the people that are not being good to their neighbor, the people that are building up their riches. I mean, I'm not a scholar of the Bible, I'm just a plain, ordinary person. Why is that one thing? Aren't we all sinners in some way? Why is that one thing creating this chasm?
I think what you were saying is the unnatural relationships that exist between men and women, too, is part of that whole issue. And I would suspect that it would have something to do with a loving, caring relationship, which is the positive side of that whole issue. And there's plenty of relationships that are not loving and caring that we would consider, quote unquote, the natural way of doing things because they are heterosexual. But we need to deal with that in our society about divorce and people who are married and are entering into sexual relationships with other people in the midst of their marriages and everything else, you know. And we have a tendency to kind of look the other way when you hear about people who are unfaithful to their partners in a heterosexual relationship. And you know, we have a tendency to maybe say that
that's normal.
Normal and divorce, you know, that and divorce counseling and all of this. You know, so there's a whole realm of things that enter into that.
Homosexuality seems to be the big sin. Yeah. Well, bigger than all the others. It seems to be the way it's projected nowadays. And that's
let's go with you and then.
Okay, so I'm trying to, you know, sort of my mind here. What seems to be an issue here to me now, after the talk here, is we're saying that, yeah, adultery is a sin, and, you know, all these other things that we do is sin, and in the church, you know, we forgive sinners, you know, and we are tolerant, okay? And that's a fine thing. And as far as homosexual, I mean, I'll be honest, we have a, you know, our organist is homosexual. I mean, and if he's come out, I don't know it. You know, I mean, I have a very good relationship, I like him very well, you know. But, you know, he's not the one that says, hey, I'm gay, you like it or leave it, you know. But I mean, but here's the question is, to me, what I hear you saying, and you saying is, this is the way God made me. And I can buy that, okay? So we're saying that, what I hear you saying is, homosexuality is not a sin. Whereas we have other people saying it is a sin. And this here seems to be a big dividing point, I mean, really. And it almost becomes an emotional issue where it's almost hard, and emotional issues are really, it's like a divorce issue. You just really have trouble getting by that. Am I on the right track here?
You're right there. Mm-hmm. The abortion issue is another one.
So.
Wait, where does the church stand? I mean, does the Lutheran church take a stand on homosexuality, or is it
the
first
schizophrenic stand?
Yeah, right.
Schizophrenic stand is we don't know where to stand.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of what it's saying.
The Lutheran Church has traditionally not taken a lot of stands on any social issues because we recognize the diversity within people. And so this particular issue, because it becomes a very emotional one, becomes even more difficult to deal with. But
we traditionally have put out social statements which look at both sides of an issue and ask people to discuss it and talk about it and arrive at some of their own conclusions, rather than saying this is the only official stand that I know of that our church has, is that at this point we have not, we have chosen to say that people who are ordained, who come out as being gay or lesbian, are not to be in an active sexual relationship with a person while they are serving parishes. And that's our only position at this point that I know of. But nothing else in terms of an official stance because of the diversity.
I'm going to get to you.
Oh, actually, I was going to say something completely different, but in response to your thing, I was thinking I'm from Oregon, and they've had a bunch of, no special rights campaigns out there for, against stop homosexuality and all that kind of thing. And I talked with, I'm a reporter, I talked with someone who was sponsoring one of those measures, and his point was if he felt that, he thinks that if it were a measure, if it were something that couldn't be chosen, like your race, the color of your skin, then the church would not feel that it was wrong. But behind the bottom of the belief that it's a sin is this belief that you're choosing your identity, or you're choosing to be that way. Which always kind of confuses me. I want to ask people who are strongly heterosexual and feel that way, well, can you choose to make yourself homosexual then? Is sexuality, is who you're attracted to, something you can choose? Because can you look at someone extremely unattractive and choose to be attracted to them? You can. I really don't think you can, but somehow that message, I don't know, doesn't seem to, or maybe they haven't thought of it that way, but at the bottom of these people's feeling that it was a sin was the question of whether it was chosen or just something that they were born with, like the color of your skin or something like that.
Are there other scripture that refers to, you read that rather lengthy list, and it's not an issue of translation or understanding or interpretation. In my mind, are there other scriptures that prohibit certain kinds of conduct that we could bring up as also being in doubt as to whether it's God's intentions or the particular point of view of the writer of those words? Is that the only one? I mean, where we say, what is the intent here?
There is something in the Levitical codes that says that a man shall not have another man.
Well, I'm referring to issues other than homosexuality. Are there other contentious? Well, I know the answer is yes, but I'm just going to stop.
I am kind of bubbling over with all bunch of stuff that I've heard thrown out there. I'm not a biblical scholar, and I'm not going to say that I understand all the passages, but I am. But I have heard references to the I believe the seven different passages that are most frequently used by people to judge homosexuals, and I think it's important to make that distinction of that people are using their Bible in that way, which is not what I believe the Bible was written for. But there's about seven different passages, some of varying severity, and the one that this gentleman quoted is generally understood as the most severe. However, as you put it, I can't agree that it's something that's not up to question or interpretation. There's a lengthy list of things that's stated in there, yes. And that lengthy list does not say being gay, being homosexual. That leads a lengthy list of ways of interacting with other people, deceitfulness, licentiousness, and many people have looked at this passage carefully and said this is about envy, it's about lust, it's about body worship, and there's an excellent book called What the Bible Really Says About Homosexuality, which is also another great reference if people are interested in reading, and it's by Bruce Bauer. However, what I would say to people is, if you want to know what God says about your neighbor, Are you going to read a book about it? Or are you going to go over and you're going to sit down and have a cup of coffee with your neighbor and find out what their life is really like, you know? If you're going to ascribe this list that you picked out of the Bible to this category of people, then share an experience with somebody who you ascribe to being in that category and see if it fits, see if you can apply that list to that person. That's what I would say to you. If you're struggling with that issue, get to know on a personal level somebody who identifies as gay, lesbian, queer, however they identify themselves, and see if you can apply those things to that person. Is this person living out this scenario of body worship and lust, or any more than the heterosexual people that I have in my life? But that being said, I also really feel like I need to express that I always get very concerned when people want to take passages of the Bible to support something in specific, to support an idea, to support their own, to support something they already believe. I think this is a very dangerous thing. This is not what the Bible was written for. The Bible is a collection of stories, and it's meant to give us ways of looking at the world that will help us become closer with God. You know, and if you're interpreting the scriptures in any way that is making you separated from other human beings, then essentially you're separating from yourself and from God, and you're using the Bible in exactly the opposite way, for exactly the opposite reasons it was written for. You know, it's meant to bring you closer to God, but if you're becoming further away, if you're having more walls come up as a result of the way that you're reading and looking at the Bible, then I would challenge you to look at how you're using the Bible and saying if my way of interpreting this is causing it to come between human beings and causing dissension between human beings, and maybe I need to look not just at the scripture but at what it means to me. And I'm sorry, just I know I've been babbling on, but just one more thing is I'd also encourage everybody to redefine for yourself what sin means to you. What is sin? What's your definition of sin? You know, because this is something I've given a lot of thought to, because you can't escape the fact that there's many passages in the Bible that that historically people have used to judge homosexuals, and many people's views that that's very clear. And so I'm not saying that we don't have to address that at all, but you can't address the issue of labeling someone a sinner or labeling something a sin without first addressing what's your definition of sin, you know? Because to me, sin, the state of sinfulness, is the state of being separated from God, you know? And that is a very personal thing. How could somebody think to yourself, could somebody else judge for you what your sins are? Can they ever really do that, you know? Because it's between you and God. What separates you from God?
I have to go do dishes, but I just wanted to say one thing to you. I can't remember your name. I can't think of anything other that the Bible would say not to do. But I think, now getting back to the positive, love your neighbor as yourself. Who is my neighbor? Isn't everyone my neighbor? Isn't that what she's saying about loving this?
But I think a lot of people come to this without using it as a weapon or a tool. They simply say, I'm confused about it. I'm confused. Could I get some sort of help? And your comments are helpful. So I come as an illiterate in terms of scripture, which says, how do I reconcile? Not that I'm beating somebody over the head with it, but I come confused.
Well, I think one of the things that those of us all around the room here, regardless of who we are, it takes a lot of courage to say, you know, in a public situation that I'm this or I'm that, or that I take this biblical passage and I have some belief in that. That takes a lot of courage, too, in a situation like this, to put the issues out front. So I applaud everybody for that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Jan Otto has, I think, think maybe most of us do this last week and this week, because of us have gone to the Bible study, is to kind of see the story as a constantly evolving one. It's not fixed in stone, and it responds to the way the biblical text responds in the 1990s is very different than the way it responds to the 1590s, and we're a different place. And so these letters, and her reminder that the First Testament, she doesn't call it the Old Testament, she calls it the First Testament and the Second Testament, how they are so intertwined, and that we have to understand the First Testament just as carefully as we understand the Second Testament. And that's not easy for us. The letter from Romans, as a matter of fact, is an example she used there about what's the context for that letter. And this is all new to us. You know, we're all lay people. We're reading the text. And so she contends that the Jewish tradition, which you have to understand the Christian tradition, is one of constantly, the rabbis constantly re-examining the stories and seeing how those stories shift. They're not fixed in stone. She did a Bible session last Friday that I would encourage anyone to listen to that tape. It's a wonder, regardless of where you are in this position, it's a wonderfully provocative and opening up conversation about where we are as Christians regarding the issue of sexuality and gender of any sort. It was last Friday's Bible study.
Wasn't Paul saying one that said that men shouldn't marry women either unless they felt they were going to burn in lust without them? Wasn't he the same fellow that said something like that? So he wasn't a real sensual person. I mean, sounds like.
Dylan, here as far as saying that maybe I'm understanding, misinterpreting what he's saying, but. God is the same as he has always been, and consequently, I don't think and I believe that the Bible is the Word of God, and I don't think that's changed from the creation story to the Revelation. I don't think that changes over time. I think it's says the same thing it did 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, today. So I don't know what, people are maybe, I don't think we can change stories. Or is it, then it seems like once you do that, you can make it say anything you want.
I'll just respond to that. Stories don't change. The stories are the same. But the structure in which we see those stories are very different. When we read a story in a story that has been a Shakespearean story now as opposed to one that was written, there's a lot of difference in our society, a lot more information. We're in a different place. And so those stories speak to us differently. And they speak to us in different kinds of ways. And so that's why we constantly come back to them. And we go over them over and over. And the interpretation isn't fixed. It isn't law. Is it law? Then it's 7 days, and somehow it's difficult to me to imagine that this was created in 7 days. It's not law, and that's where I have some difficulty as a layperson in the church.
We don't, as Christians living under the New Testament, we don't live under the law.
But the New Testament, you can't. Well, we can argue that this is the point of view, and the biblical scholars contend you can't live under the New Testament. New Testament is a covenant, but we have to understand the first covenant as well. So both covenants have to be totally understood in order to see it fully. And we tend to limit our vision to that second covenant. Now that's just the point of view. Mm-hmm. I'm not absolutely confident in my point of view, but I'm worried about people who are overly confident in their own points of view.
Let's go with you.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna really say much today. I just wanted to kind of absorb everything. But you did mention the Levitical text, and I just was curious what your perspective on that is. It's an interesting.
Well, I guess I would want to touch on this issue as well, around how we look at the Bible in the first place. Is this Walter Brueggemann has a great book. It's got many great books, but.
That's the one I'm thinking of. It's basically, it's looking how to look at the Bible. And Walter Brueggemann's a professor at a Chicago seminary, somewhere back there. Stretching the limits of my knowledge. At any rate, he would say that the Bible is a faith book. The Bible is the story of our faith, and that does not change. And God is the same in that regard. And God has always been and always will continue to be, and the same loving God who made these promises and is a promise keeper. But then there are these stories that we have to deal with, and stories that our perceptions are going to change on. For example, David had many wives, and at this point in time, we don't think that that's acceptable. And so we look at that a little bit differently. We also know that the relationship between Sarah and Abraham had some serious problems. They were not this great, wonderful, perfect couple. They fell short of the glory of God as well. And how we look at that over time is going to change significantly, especially with becoming more aware of women's rights and things like that. So it's my hope in general, and specifically around this issue, that we can wrestle with those stories and look at what does this story mean for me today? How is God speaking to me and to this community through this story today? And it's the same God speaking, but the message might be tuned a little bit differently where we are culturally.
How does AIDS fit into the picture?
Into which picture?
Into the picture where we're talking about.
The story of the biblical story, or?
Sexual
yeah. How does that fit in?
With, I guess I'm confused as to exactly what your question is.
Into just the general community of homosexuals?
Yeah, how does AIDS, where did AIDS originate? How did it get started? Where is it going? How, you know, let's look at that in the section.
It's a general concern for most homosexuals because it's more easily spread.
At first it came out that
it came out as the
homosexuals.
The gay cancer, gay plague. And
but it's been in the heterosexual community of Africa for years. It's a concern for everybody.
It is.
Do you know where it started or where the story came from?
They
think the
rainforest. Just read
the book on it. They believe that's where it started.
In monkeys, it's usually found.
That's
in monkeys,
right.
It makes a jump.
Where male monkeys were having sex with male monkeys, and female monkeys were having sex with female monkeys.
I don't think
that's
so.
That's actually not been scientifically proven.
Well,
that's not been scientifically proven.
No, but they've talked about it, and they say that's what they think.
It's
just like they think that a man originated in Africa. Have you seen that or read that? In the last year or so, they say
the people
originated in Africa, not over there in the Tigris and Euphrates River in Iraq, where the Garden of Eden was. That, you know, this is what the scientific world is saying.
Okay.
Nobody's heard that but me?
Well, no.
You look like
they
you're
just
kind
found
of
another, they found another fossil.
Yeah.
Well,
yes, in the back. Yeah.
I just felt the need to just bring it out into the open and best it come from me than anybody else. I sense that the issue that's kind of being prodded at here is AIDS the plague from God against homosexuals because God hates homosexuals and has said that they should die and they will die. There. I said it. Now, I have nothing else to say about it except for the fact that I say, this is not my vision of God.
That's case in one of them.
But, please, I think it needs to be defined, and I thank you for framing that, actually, because it takes, as the other gentleman said, it takes courage to frame your viewpoint. Especially in, if you think other people don't want to hear it, and I'm very familiar with that concept.
Yeah, but there are a multitude of infectious diseases that kill every living thing. And to pick out one particular variety and attribute some sort of meaning to it is nonsense, I think.
AIDS is pretty equal opportunity.
And actually, for the lowest risk group population is lesbians. So, I don't know what you want to make of that.
What does the gay community feel is the answer to this situation? Do they have suggestions or ideas or proposals for how to sway public opinion?
About
the church should take a leadership role.
Just about accepting homosexuals, you mean?
Yeah.
There is every viewpoint that you would find in society at large within the gay community, from people who think that they should chain themselves to the desks of primetime news people to gain attention to themselves, to people who feel like real progress is made only on the interpersonal level and not on the political level at all. There's every range of activism that you would find in the community, in the country at large. There's many, many different viewpoints within the gay community as to how that education should happen.
Well, my granddaughter is a college graduate to be a teacher in high school, but she can't apply for a teaching position because if she's gone into a new career, because if a student's parents found out she was gay, they would probably not allow their children to attend that class.
Yeah, you know, actually, I know some gay high school teachers personally, and they're some of the best and most gifted teachers, and one in particular who I know is in a very conservative suburb in Georgia, and he has been out for many years as a school teacher, and he's had issues come up, but he has stood his ground, and he has done what he has chosen to be trying to do, which is teach, not just in the classroom, but by way of how he lives his life and the example he sets as a human being.
My brother and my brother-in-law are both teachers, so it's
were
possible.
They hired before they were out?
No, they were same address, living together, and it still saddens me to they enter into this remission back into the closet because of the present danger of because they're in suburban Chicago. That's where my brother-in-law teaches music, and there would be a problem with the students and with some of the teachers there.
They're at risk.
They are at risk.
Yeah.
And
I
respect that risk, but we also need pioneers to start anything in life, I think.
Part of the problem is the assumption that just because a person is gay or lesbian that they're promiscuous.
And they're a danger.
And that they're a danger. And what is to say that, we've heard any number of things on the radio recently about people, teachers, for instance, who have entered into relationships with their students, you know, on heterosexual level. And that's just as promiscuous. I mean, there's just as, I don't have any statistics, but I would venture to say that there's just as much promiscuity amongst the heterosexual community as there is amongst any. And to make the assumption that just because a person is gay or lesbian that they're going to be more promiscuous than somebody else is a terrible thing to assume.
You know, it always seems so incredible to me that we gauge gay people on what they do in their bedrooms, and the rest of us, we're never, you know, I mean, how often do you say, well, I wonder what kind of sex they have before you would hire them, you know? I mean, it isn't any of our business.
How many of us ever had to say, well, I came out of the closet as a heterosexual? I mean,
yeah, exactly. You know, never. It's just an incredible way to gauge people.
When you say that, then you mean that presidents like Willie Clinton was okay to get underneath his old business desk there in the Capitol building and have sex with his intern who works in the Capitol?
That's a promiscuous.
I didn't say it was okay. I said
it's not our business.
Well, it isn't.
Yeah,
I don't think it is ours.
It isn't our business.
I don't think so.
I think I that there that. Would be a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of disparity in opinions on that particular issue.
Yes.
And
one needs to evaluate each individual based upon their own, where they're coming from. Bill Clinton, that was promiscuous, and maybe it would affect his ability to be a good president. And you know, that's something that one would have to judge. But that's something that you would still judge as on the individual basis, rather than saying just because, you know, to equate that with all people, I guess.
I wanted to, you mentioned something about the risk that your granddaughter would take by being a teacher. And there, I wanted to say that there are lots of varying differences within the gay and lesbian community. I even hesitate to say gay and lesbian community because we are as different as everybody else and we are in and amongst you and
there are no secret handshakes.
No secret handshakes. None of that sort of thing. So to say community is strange. But at any rate, one of the things that I have found personally with regards to risk goes back to a quote I once heard that there are not, there are fewer things that I regret not saying than, I tend to regret more the things I don't say than the things I do say. And that my silence is not going to protect me. Because living in that silence is going to eat me alive a whole lot more than actually speaking the truth.
Well, she is out, and she and her friend were both hired by Microsoft, so they didn't have any problems with the issue. high schools can be a little different.
Yeah, definitely.
Or grammar school is even worse.
I guess the only
question. It's catchy, you know.
The only question I have is, I presume gays and lesbians are born that way, so to speak, but are there also others that are led into it, so to speak?
There's no evidence to suggest that whatsoever, but there is evidence to suggest a continuum of sexuality in all people, and that really the only reason that 90% of the people are self-identified as heterosexual is because in our culture at this particular point in time, it's the path of least resistance. There's so many more social rewards. And it's so much less pain involved with self-identifying yourself as heterosexual, which is why even many homosexuals identify themselves as heterosexual, because they're not equipped to deal with that amount of ugliness directed at them, you know. But there is evidence that suggests that there's a continuum that most human beings fall somewhere in between in the spectrum of having. Of having natural attractants to people of the same sex as well as to the opposite sex.
I was just going to comment, you were talking about that there's these ads, I think, that were playing last year or so about people, gay people who had, I don't know, gone to some kind of therapy, overcome their gayness, and were married, a couple of married, and all that kind of, and, you know, I have a very interesting reaction to that, because I happen to be very supportive of the gay community in life, you know. Your sexuality is what it is. But, you know, I think maybe that's true for some people. I guess what I'm against is any blanket stereotypes about sexuality by anybody, either in the gay community or in the heterosexual community. You don't know. Maybe there are some gay people who can do that. And if they can't, great, you shouldn't jump to the conclusion then that all of them can. You know, or that all of them want to, right? Maybe for some people it works and it's a good thing, and great if that's what they want to do. You know, it's just everyone is so all over the map that any kind of blanket generalizations, I think, about sexuality in any way is dangerous or, you know, erroneous.
I think every child who's growing up as an adolescent is struggling with their sexuality, and may manifest itself in different ways. And to say there may be some who have decided for whatever reason that they are homosexual or gay, a lesbian, and they may not be, you know, they may not have found themselves sexually yet, and so they for them to deal with that in a way that may manifest itself in something that is rather promiscuous or odd, and so would a person who is the opposite, who is heterosexual. But to assume then that they're that way, and that they're gonna misuse and abuse their sexuality just for that reason, I think is not very open-minded about the struggle that we all go through.
Also, it's not the time when someone finds out what they really are can vary. Margaret Kammermeyer had been married and had children that were almost grown when it finally dawned on her. If you're familiar with who she is, my mentioned name, that you don't
this
know.
This Washington Colonel, yeah, the Army Colonel.
We are out of time. And thanks for coming today. It's my hope that this will be the beginning of a conversation, and that now you know people who are interested in this topic, and maybe you can carry this conversation along with you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.